Welcome to the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley, psychology student and international best-selling psychology author of over 30 psychology books, bringing you the latest psychology news, fascinating psychology topics and more each week. If you want to learn more, then please check out connorwhiteley.net/books. And don't forget to like and subscribe to the YouTube video or follow on your favourite podcast app. And here's the show. Hi everyone and welcome to episode 266 of the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley. And today's episode is on how to stop feeling helpless to help a friend or loved one. And it's Saturday the 18th of May 2024 as I record this. So the reason why I wanted to do this podcast episode is because this is how I've been feeling, how another friend of mine has been feeling quite a lot lately. We've both been feeling very helpless towards each other, which is fine, and like we're still there for each other. We're talking quite a bit because we've both been through quite a lot of stuff recently. But it did sort of get to the point where I just wanted to research this and find out how do I stop feeling so helpless. Because it's not a nice feeling. It's a feeling that definitely helps you towards your friends and your family members because it means that you care about them. But it also means that you don't feel great. And I think as aspiring clinical psychologists or fully qualified professionals, I think this is even more annoying for us because we spend our days, or we want to in the future, giving people mental health support. We help people, we improve their lives, we give them the tools and techniques that they need to go on to take control of their lives. But when our friends and our family members are struggling and we can't help them, I think that's a real kick in the teeth because I think it can lead to a lot of self-doubt about, well, if I can't help my friend or my loved one, how am I meant to help a random stranger who comes into my office seeking help? That's basically my feelings at times, so I hope this is very useful, a podcast episode for all of us, because I know I really found this useful, because I definitely don't feel as helpless as I did before I did this research. So you've got that to look forward to in the content part of today's episode. So moving on to the psychology news section, we're reading from the British Psychological Society Research Digest, and the first one is a little weird, I will admit. Overly good deals signals hidden costs. Imagine that you're looking for a job that pays £40 an hour. You see two job ads, both what looks to be the same role, but one job is offering £46 an hour and the other is offering £120. Be honest, which one would you go for? Standard economic theory would argue that we'd go for the highest paying job. However, new research in Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin, in over more than 4,000 people, reveals that when something appears too good to be true, we tend to assume that there's a hidden phantom cost, which can send us sprinting in the opposite direction. This week, Emmy Young summarises this research from Andrew J. Vogash and colleagues who analyse reactions to suspiciously good deals across 10 separate and occasionally a bit unsettling studies. And if you want the roundup, you can go to the BPS Research Digest website. Now, this one, I think, is always quite interesting, simply because, £120 an hour, I think that's a little weird. To be honest, £46 an hour, I have no idea what sort of job would even offer that, because that's an insane amount. That seriously is. But I completely agree, like, £120 an hour, that would be amazing, because that means I could basically work, I don't know, a few hours a day, and I'll be perfectly happy, to be honest. But I also think that that's a suspiciously a lot amount. So my first question with the beat. Are the hours actually regular? And also, what other stuff would you have to do? Like, would there be a lot of unpaid stuff too to them? So I think that's quite an interesting one. Also, I would argue that standard economic theory. Now, well, this is something I do a lot like about psychology. And whenever people say something stupid, like psychology is common sense, which it isn't. This is the sort of thing that I like to throw back at people's faces, though. Because common sense or standard economic theory would argue that, yes, we would go for the £120 an hour job. But in reality, when we actually look at the actual psychological findings, we find the opposite. So if you ever hear someone saying that psychology is common sense, please remember this study, because that is not the case. But financial behaviour, always fun to look at. So the second one is, it's not all about the kick. In the heat of the moment, footballers have to make split-second decisions about whether or not to pass the ball. To make that judgment, they have to rapidly locate teammates and the opposition and triangulate how likely any given wallop is to reach the target. Some research has hinted that athletes are better than non-athletes at general measures of attention and speed of cognitive processing. There's even some previous research pointing to high levels of self-control amongst footballers. A recent study from Takayano Matsutake, I'm really sorry, I probably butchered that, and colleagues take this further, zeroing in on how a player's process sports of relating decisions. The findings suggest that the marker of a good player isn't just about knowing when to strike, but knowing when to hold back. Okay, now this is a good one. This is a good one, because even though I have no interest in sports, I know there's probably lots of sports fans listening to this, but I could not really care less about sports. I have no interest of watching football and stuff like that. Even though it's psychology, when it merges with sports, I basically turn in the opposite direction, because sports psychology, it's interesting. It does have a place in psychology, obviously, and I think that the people who work in sports psychology are heroes amongst themselves, because they have to deal with some very arrogant people, according to a sports psychologist that gave us a lecture once. So if you want to do sports psychology, you have my admiration, because you guys have to deal with some really arrogant people, definitely. Even though as a non-sports person, I do tend to say to my friends and other people that sport can't be that complicated. In reality, I do understand how complicated it is. And that's why I'm so bad at sports. It's a bit too complicated for me at times. Like, slightly off a light tangent, one of my friends wants to play tennis with me. Even though I told them the story of when I was playing badminton at a school, my friend said, whatever happens, hit the shuttlecock behind me. So I hit it because it went behind him. I whacked him over the head and I bent the badminton racket so it looked like a chip fire. So, and my friend still wants to play tennis with me. So I understand how difficult it is, though. And as much as I want to say more, I'm actually not going to, because I can't think of anything useful to say. And I've been trying to record something useful worth like a few takes, though. So I'm just going to skip this one. And the final one is, the echoes of psychology's past. Open quote. In writing a book that deals with the influences of power, representation and colonialism on psychology, perhaps our biggest task was to make the subject relevant to those not overly interested in a seemingly recent fad of equality, diversity and inclusion. If you yourself aren't racist or sexist, Then what does this have to do, Rob, with the work you will carry out now? Our answer is that the echoes of the past are everywhere. We are peeking through the decades, determining the people who will engage with psychology and how we do so. The narratives that shape psychology give us insights into the profound impact that our collective history still exerts on us. Close quote. In the new piece for the psychologist, Evan Robbins and Aka O'Connor represents six historical episodes in psychological science that underlie why it's so imperative for psychological research to think complexly, not just about the data they aim to capture, but the people who provided and how their work might influence wider norms. Okay, this is definitely quite a good one though, because even though I'm actually going to take a slight offshoot of this, let's face it, psychology does have a very dark past, especially when we think about conversion therapy, all the like discrimination that it's caused, and basically everything that is done to the LGBT plus community. Right, psychology was not helpful in that whatsoever. And the homophobia and everything that I've seen from that, a lot of it is based on what psychology did with DSM. And I think this is the key when it comes to the data we collect is influenced by wider norms. So psychology, and to be honest, this goes for all sciences. When science says something is wrong, or when a science tries to establish a fact that is actually more nuanced, then that causes a lot of difficulties. And I'm actually going to go there, because even though I know half of you are going to turn off at this, so even if we try and do a biological sex and a gender, the general scientific consensus, which lay people understand, is that there's only male or female. But if you actually look at the biology and the actual science behind it, there's actually tons of genetic variation that works. Even in our biology, there's not just male or female. There's no such thing as just those two constructs. So I think this is something that we do need to think about, because everything that psychology has done in the past, right or wrong, it still impacts the current world though. And I think that as future or current psychologists, we've got to be careful about, one, we don't continue this, or we don't continue any bad legacies, but we also need to be careful of, we don't make any new negative legacies, which will impact the future generations. So something to think about, and I really would recommend that you actually read that piece for the psychologist. So I hope you enjoy the psychology news section. So let's move on to the person update. So we're moving on to the person update. This week has been very weird, and also because it's gone very fast and very slow. So first of all, exams. Exam seasons are always fun, and especially when they're statistical theory and are computing exams. So thankfully they were online, and thankfully they went really well, to be honest. They went a lot better than I was expecting, because, well, I've not been able to revise much. I've not been able to do grand amounts of stuff because of everything that's been going on. So to be honest, I was pretty certain I was going to fail these exams, especially when I had a massive meltdown and a panic attack halfway through my stats theory. So thankfully, because they're online exams, we got the results on Friday morning, so less than 24 hours after our computing exam. So thankfully I've passed both of them. I've even got a merit in one of them, which I was really, really happy with, because I've basically passed stats quite comfortably, which I was quite happy with. Considering all the problems we've had, I'm really grateful for, one, the support that the university's given us, And to be honest, other students are brilliant because I think this is what I realised in my master's though, because my placement year in my undergrad, I was sort of disconnected between cohorts. And this is the nice thing about university. It's very sort of public place. You can ask students like for help, even if you look a bit stupid. Like, I did look a bit stupid the morning of my computing exam because I was trying to argue something. Someone else was trying to argue something else also. And thankfully, I was right in at the end. But it was very nerve-wracking there because the person that was arguing. They're really intelligent, and I mean, like, they're top of the, like, stats. Like, this is, like, the one person you go to if you want to know about stats. So, to be honest, considering I won an argument against them, I'm quite proud of myself. But the reason why I'm telling you this is that it's very much a case of if you're scared about an exam, as long as you try your best, as long as you try and understand the content as much as possible, and as long as you tap into your resources, whether it's a module current arena, your friends, other students, a WhatsApp group, the PowerPoint slides, whatever, as long as you try and do everything that you possibly can, you're going to be fine. And even if you fail, then you can't be that mad at yourself because you've done everything that you possibly could. And considering that, like, it's exam season, I just wanted to give that word of encouragement. And as always, I always love to know your thoughts and feelings on today's episode. So you can always email me, ConnorWiley@ConnorWiley.net. You can always leave a comment down the show notes at ConnorWiley.net/podcast. And you can always tweet me on Twitter at SciFiWiley. I always love to hear from all of you because it really helps make the podcast feel more like a conversation. And you can always leave a comment on the Facebook post at Connor Whiteley Psychology Author, or contact me on LinkedIn. And today's episode has been sponsored by Social Psychology, a guide to social and cultural psychology. So the reason why this is a great sponsor for today's episode is because we're looking at feelings of, like, helplessness, friendships, social groups, and loved ones. So this entire episode is very much based in social psychology, and this great, really easy to understand book helps you to understand how does the social group impact us, how does it impact our, like, group behaviors, for example, like obedience, conformity, persuasion, but then how does it also impact us on the individual level? For example, our self-worth, social comparisons, our helping our behaviours, and it's only more really useful and, to be honest, really critical topics that you can actually apply to your everyday life. So even though social psychology isn't actually one of my favourites within psychology, I still really enjoy it because you can apply a lot about what you read in, like, social psychology to your everyday life. So it's really important, it's really, like, engaging, and I really do recommend this book. So that's Social Psychology, a guide to social and cultural psychology, available from all major ebook retailers. And you can order the paperback and hardback version from Amazon, local bookstore, or local library if you request it. And you can also get the audiobook version, narrated by artificial intelligence, from selected audiobook retailers like Spotify, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, and selected library systems like Bacon Taylor, Biblioteca, and Overdrive. Also, whilst buying books helps to support the creation and the editing of the podcast, my time is sponsored by my wonderful patrons. And as always, a massive thank you to my patrons, with your support shows that you like the show and you want it to continue. So if you want to become a patron and get tons of great rewards, now you can. At patreon.com/thepsychologyworldpodcast. So that's now for the personal update. Let's move on to the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the content part of today's episode. So we're going to be talking about how to stop feeling powerless to help a friend or loved one. And because this is a really good episode and I actually want to read the introduction that I wrote for this episode, I'm just going to go into it, dive into it. So this is going to be fun. There comes a point in all our lives when a friend or loved one goes there through something that hurts them, rattles them, or it even traumatizes them. When this happens, we can feel powerless or helpless to support them because we can see how badly it's affected them and we have no idea how to support them. Or even worse, in my experience, we all want to support them even more, but we know this can't happen as it would turn a relationship into something that isn't healthy. I think for aspiring or qualified mental health professionals, this feeling is even worse, since we spend our days empowering, supporting, and giving our clients hope within our professional boundaries, but we can't help the people that we care about most. So we're going to be learning about the tips and tricks to help us feel less powerless to help the people who will we love most. And just as a quick note, as always, nothing on the podcast is any sort of official advice whatsoever. So something that I really liked about the introduction is that I had a penny drop moment when I was writing it, because I realised why I've been feeling so powerless lately. I wasn't sure. A very close friend of mine is going through stuff. I'm going through stuff at the moment too. Was my episode, and we both admitted feeling powerless to help each other. So this got me thinking about the other times when I felt powerless in friendships to help the other, and I realised that this just pops up, and actually this is part of a friendship though. So something that I want to say straight away, this is normal. It's normal to feel powerless, because this is just how friendships work at times. And it means that you care about the other person, and that's great. So after a few decades of not having a lot of great friends that care about me too much, I know how great and powerful it is just knowing that a friend cares about you. However, as much as I know it's normal to feel powerless and helpless in a friendship, when the other is going through something, it still doesn't make it easy on you, because your friend is in emotional pain. We all hate our friends that are going through that, so we want to help. Sometimes that just isn't possible, and that's okay. So here are some ways that we can feel more powerful to help in a friendship or a family relationship. Just listen without trying to fix it. Now, when it came to researching this rather niche topic on the internet, I started smiling and laughing after a while, because a grateful friend of this did all of this to me just before my breakdown last year, because he was great in this regard, and I know a lot about feeling less helpless and powerless from him. As a result, when your friend is going through something, just listen to them. Don't interrupt and don't offer 10,000 solutions, since you need to allow your friend or loved one to tell you what happened, how they feel about it without jumping in, being rude and offering up solutions. The problem with you offering up solutions and interrupting them is that it shuts them down. It doesn't make them feel listened to and isn't respectful. The entire point of you being their friend is that they know that you're there for them and that you're trying to understand and empathize with what they went through. When I told friends about my assault, because I only told one friend in person, because they only got bits and pieces over text, they were great because they just sat there, listened, and they waited for me to finish. My former friend did the same when I told him about my abuse and trauma. Both friends made me feel valued, that they cared about me, and that they were there for me. That meant a lot. However, if we flip it over, when someone in my social world did interrupt me and try to offer up solutions when I was trying to tell them about my episode, it hurt. It was so disempowering to be shut down like that, and it only increased my feelings of shame, guilt, and it made me feel like I just didn't matter. Truly made me feel like I did not matter whatsoever. That's why when a friend is telling you what happened and how they feel, just listen to them. And when my friend was telling me what happened yesterday at the time of writing, I did feel a bit silly because I was just listening, nodding along, and I was completely focused on my friend because I wanted them to know that I was there no matter what. And I will add here that sometimes, or often, you might need to process what your friend's telling you. Like, I definitely needed to process what my friend told me just because it hit very close to home. So my biggest unofficial tip here is that do not process it in front of them or in the moment. Go away, think about it, and talk to your friend or loved one about it later on if needed. The entire point of your friend telling you what happened is so that you can be there for them. This isn't about you at that point in time. Show empathy and encouragement. So continuing with this initial conversation, or to be honest, whenever your friend or loved one needs it, it's good to acknowledge their pain, let them know that you care, and say something supportive. Of course, what you say exactly depends on the relationship and your friendship, but make it personal. For example, because of my breakdown and everything surrounding it, I have massive issues about me just waiting for my friends just to leave me. Sort of like massive abandonment issues that pop up from time to time. So it's always nice when my friends say that they aren't going everywhere and that they care about me and that they're here. And linking this towards reducing feelings of powerlessness, by offering empathy and encouragement, you were doing something for your friend. You seriously are. You're helping them to realise that there is a future. Everything will be okay and this will pass. A personal example is I have massive fears at the moment because moving in with some friends next year for my final year of my master's, and I'm scared that my assault reactions will make it hellish and stuff like that for them and for me. Of course, there's not a single aspect of these fears that is based in any sort of reality. So I told my friend in passing, and I did almost cry about it. So they simply offered us some encouragement, and they stressed how I would be better over time. And it was a helpful reminder. Find them resources. Now, I've been on the receiving end of this, and it is one of the nicest feelings ever. Due to about a week before my breakdown, my former friend knew I was going through that stuff, and the next day he sent me a little leaflet about a charity that might be able to support me for free. I do like free things, to be honest. That meant the world to me because it meant that he was thinking of me. He cared enough to see something, think of me, and send me a photo of it later on. That was just such a kind thing to do. Especially because finding resources is different to listening to someone. Because when you listen to someone, you're there. And you could argue that you have to listen. You're finding resources for someone and sending them to your friend or loved one, that is even kinder because you have to go out of your way to do it. On the whole, if your friend or loved one is struggling, then definitely send them some resources randomly. Of course, don't overdo it and make sure that the resources are relevant, but it's an extremely kind thing to do because you seriously didn't have to do that. Keep it healthy. So I want to wrap up this podcast episode with this section, wasn't as critical. I know from my past emotional dependency and intensity that it's extremely tempting to go all in, move heaven and earth for someone that you would care about. Thankfully, I've never quite done it this badly, but I've come extremely borderline, and that is unhealthy. You need to understand that when a loved one or friend is in a trouble or distress, you are just a friend, and just I say in air quotes. You aren't their partner, you aren't their therapist, you aren't their parent. You are just a friend and that's it. Therefore, you need to respond to how a friend would, and you need to offer support that reflects your relationship to that friend or loved one. For example, me stressing that I'm always there for my friend, me texting my friend every other day, and me making kind offers to my friend every so often. That is okay because we are close a friend and we've been through stuff together. Yet, if I did the same sort of thing towards a friend that I'm not close with, then that would be intense, unhealthy, and that would not be a good idea. Like, there's one friend I can just imagine myself doing like this too, like as a joke. That would not go well down. That would not go well down whatsoever. So don't do it. You've got to think about your relationship to that person. Therefore, when it comes to helping out a friend, you need to effectively know your place. You can't move heaven and earth for someone without your friendship turning toxic and unhealthy, and that will never end well whatsoever. Of course, if your friend needs a therapist or professional or legal help, then talk to them about it. Just don't be it. Finally, I think that this is hard for all of us aspiring or qualified mental health professionals because we want to help. Because we do have a good idea about how to help and we want to use our skills that we use every day in our jobs to help our friend or loved one. It is simply what we normally do, so we want to do it in our spare time too. But we can't. For the sake of our relationships, we have to know our place. There are limits. Conclusion. I know it's extremely rare for me to write psychology podcast episodes for me based on my egg experience, even though we've had a few of them recently. And I also did a bunch last August and September. But anyway, in the grand scheme of things, it is very rare for me to feel the need to write an episode just for me. However, I have been feeling powerless to help friends and the loved ones. My natural tendency is just to do all I can to help people and to be honest, sort of just forget the consequences. Because I do care about people and I really hate seeing people in emotional pain. Nonetheless, this episode has been helpful to me because it's shown me that listening without trying to fix it, expressing empathy and encouragement, finding them resources and keeping it healthy is critical to feeling less powerless in this situation. We're all going to make mistakes, by the way. We're always going to overstep a little at some point in our lives when a friend or loved one is in distress. You need to remember the lessons in this episode. Then you'll feel more powerful, more helpful, and ultimately better about your life and what your friend is going through. You can't help but your friend or loved one if you restrain and direct yourself worrying about them. Remember boundaries and remember the four lessons in this episode, and it will be okay in the end. However long it takes, it will be okay. This too shall pass. So I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode and you got something out of it. As I mentioned earlier, I really just did this podcast episode for me. Because I really hate feeling powerless. Especially because what my friends are going through and me going through stuff at the same time. It is very much this very annoying clash which I don't like and I do find it so annoying. So I'm hoping that if I write this a podcast episode, if I talk about it and if I put it out there, it will make me feel better. And I think it has, to be honest. And I really hope that this does help other people too, because we all feel powerless at certain times. And I hope that by doing this episode and these lessons, people will also feel better in the future. So if you know anyone who would enjoy today's episode, then please share it with them. I'm always really grateful when you wonderful people help spread the word about the podcast. And if you want to learn more, then please check out Social Psychology, a guide to social and cultural psychology, available in all the usual places. And if you want to become a patron of the show, then now you can. patreon.com/thepsychologyworldpodcast, or buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/ConWiley. So have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. Please remember to like the video and subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow the podcast on your favourite podcast app. And if you wanted to learn more, then please check out the backlist of the podcast episodes or my books at conwiley.net. So have a great day, and I'll see you next time.